Hit it.
Welcome to the Test Talks Podcast, the place to go to geek out on software testing. And now your host, whose mission is to help you succeed with test automation, Joe Colantonio.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Test Talks, a podcast dedicated to all things test automation related. I'm your host, Joe, from joecolantonio.com. And today we're going to be speaking all about mobile CI. But first, let's hear it for our awesome sponsor, Sauce Labs. Today's episode is sponsored by Sauce Labs. Sauce Labs makes test automation awesome. Sauce's cloud-based Selenium Grid helps developers test web and mobile apps across more than 400 browser and OS platforms. Sauce also supports Appium and popular JavaScript unit testing frameworks and integrates with all the top programming languages, test frameworks, and CI systems. With built-in video recording, debugging tools, and secure tunneling for firewall testing, Sauce helps you ship better software faster. Sign up at saucelabs.com with promo code TESTTALKS14 and get 20 hours of automated testing for free. So my question for you today is, do you want to take your mobile app development and testing and CI efforts to the next level? Does it take you a long time to deploy your apps? Ship.io can help. Ship.io was developed specifically for continuous delivery of native iOS and Android mobile apps to help you easily build, test, deploy, and ship quality apps faster. Today, we'll be speaking with Tim Rosenblatt, an engineer at Ship.io, as he shares with us how to improve our mobile app CI development efforts. Check it out. Hey, Tim. Welcome to Test Talks.
Hey, Joe. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Before we get started, can you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm an engineer over here at Ship.io. I've been doing engineering for, well, I'm one of those nerds that was learned to write BASIC at 10 years old on my Commodore 64. So I've been doing it for quite a while. And over here building a really great CI/CD platform for mobile applications.
Cool. So Tim, before we get into Ship.io, how is testing mobile apps different than testing, say, other software platforms? Like you said, you've been programming since you were 10. So are there any challenges that you've seen with mobile testing that may be unique to mobile testing or mobile development?
You know, there are quite a few differences between, you know, maybe like installed software, server software, and then mobile software. One of the big things that I think is interesting about mobile testing as opposed to maybe server testing is the concept of like artifacts and, that are produced during the test process that you might want to pull back down and analyze later, not necessarily just like logs, but also like the compiled binaries and anything that comes out of that. That's something that I think is a little bit distinctive about mobile that is also sort of underrated. Obviously, on top of that, there's the fact that you're dealing with lots of different devices. Android fragmentation is this big thing that we hear about all the time, and it's a real thing. There's like, you know, 10,000 different types of devices out there. And then also you're dealing with all the complexities of a mobile environment where, someone might lose wireless signal in the middle of a download, or they might switch from Wi-Fi over to a cell network, you know, GPS type things because the device is moving around and all the sensors that you're dealing with. Those are things that really have never existed when you're thinking about the more traditional, I think, testing of server software, testing of application code.
Now, you spoke about device fragmentation. How do you handle that, being able to test on all these different devices, all these different OS systems? Do you recommend crowdsourcing?
You know, there's a couple of different ways about how to deal with that. It is a really good question, and it's challenging. So this is the sort of thing that I don't think there's really any, you know, single silver bullet type of answer. I think it's really important to look at the situation that you're in and the situation that your customers are in. So for example, let's maybe look at this from the other side, the iOS side. With iOS, you're, you know, and when you're dealing with consumer apps, for the most part, you can count on the fact that people are running hardware that's been purchased in the last 2 years. And I think within 30 days of an OS release, something like 80% of people are on the latest version of iOS. So you have to expand your thinking a little bit and think about what would cause people to not be on newer hardware. What would cause people to be in these different circumstances? You know, if you're targeting maybe the type of crowd that updates their devices very frequently and is more likely to be buying high-end, expensive hardware, you have a much smaller set than if you're targeting the entire market of, you know, sort of consumer apps, I think, would maybe be a good way of defining that. So the more devices that you're going to have in that longer tail of devices, the more you're going to want to do things like crowdsourcing your testing, maybe have a group of people that you trust that are going to give good feedback, and they can be part of your QA process. One of the other techniques that a lot of people use is what's called real device testing. And there's a few companies out there that basically have just enormous rooms filled with every mobile device you've ever seen. And you can install software onto those devices and then run your tests with also video and image assets being, you know, sent back to you so that you can make sure that it looks right. You know, especially if you're, you know, trying to create like a really, you know, premium app experience, really like, you know, if your app is the face of your company, you want to make sure it looks good on all these devices. And especially with, you know, like I said, the Android side of the universe is a little bit more intense with this. You want to make sure that it's going to look good on all of those screens that are out there because of the complexities of UI code. So, you know, picking your sample for a QA release, picking the sort of people that would be appropriate, there's some art to that. And then also, you know, taking advantage of the fact that there are folks out there who have set up these test farms, and you can run as many tests as you want directly on these devices to make sure that they're going to function the way that you expect. That's another technique that's really handy for sussing out some of these harder to find bugs, or maybe some of the UI UX bugs that we care a lot about.
Cool. More and more companies are moving towards continuous integration, continuous delivery. How is mobile CI different than the CI environment most people probably are familiar with when they're developing normal web applications?
So one of the big differences with mobile CI versus the traditional CI that we all think of is that you've got to work with external app stores, right? You've got obviously the App Store that Apple runs, and then you've got Google Play on the Android side. In addition to some of the other services, like I mentioned to you earlier about real device testing, that you might want to test your app on actual mobile devices as opposed to just simulators and emulators that run within the CI service. So there's these other third-party services that exist out there, and from the App Store and the Google Play Store, these services that you have to work with and you have to integrate with. Keeping those integrations working all of the time and knowing when to push code to which of these services, all of that sort of stuff is handled by the mobile CI service. And I think those deeper integrations are where mobile CI is much more different than CI of server code or installed code.
Awesome. So are there any differences that, say, an Android developer needs to be concerned of as opposed to an iOS developer when it comes to mobile CI?
My mind immediately goes to the fragmentation side of things. That really is probably the biggest thing that I think in terms of the type of challenge that all developers, that sort of like umbrella thing that all developers are going to be faced with. I know there are some other things. We released a report about this the other day, and I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but there are some differences about the dynamics of how iOS versus Android teams operate internally. For example, one of the things that we found is that iOS teams actually do more frequent commits and more frequent pushes than Android developers, and no one's really sure why that is. So there are some of those dynamics that operate at a deeper level than the sort of like fragmentation issue that I mentioned earlier. I think things like that really emphasize how important it is that when people are thinking about toolings and practices, it's not just necessarily the iOS-Android umbrella, but it's a lot more to do with that specific team, what kind of resource allocations they have, what kind of deadlines that they have to deal with. A lot of that really goes more into it. You know, with the human factor of mobile app testing, that's another thing that's going to play into, you know, if you're doing releases every 2 weeks versus you're doing releases every 2 months, that's going to change some of your decision making, maybe more so than the iOS-Android differentiation.
So Tim, how does the Ship.io process handle manual testing? And what would you say are the benefits of manual testing versus automated testing?
So yeah, the way Ship works is that it's set up for both the manual testing, where you're distributing to a limited, you know, number of devices for your QA process, and then also the automatic testing of just, you know, does the code actually compile? Does it do what we want it to? Are any integration tests running? Obviously, your advantage is that you can get much more granular feedback when you have automated tests, and much more consistent execution of those tests. That lends itself to the sort of thing that you run constantly. You're all, you know, you can on every pull request, if you follow that model of development, you run the automatic tests. There's no question. For going out and advancing your code to the human QA side of things, that's something you're going to want to do a little less regularly. If you're testing with real users, they have other things in their day that they need to do. They're not only waiting for you to deploy a new version of your code. The other complexity that comes up with real human testing is that people are not ever going to be as diligent in the test environments that they sort of, and I'm waving my hands around here, in the test environments that they create, you know, putting that in air quotes. They're not really creating these test environments in a conscious way. They're not going through a checklist. They're just using the app the way that they would. They're using the app with their data. So the feedback that you get from humans is going to be a little bit more, it's going to be spaced farther apart, and it may not be quite as detailed as some of the logs that you might get from automatic testing. Although there actually are a few companies that are coming up that are looking to help mitigate that problem a bit. Because on the flip side, a human is going to give you much more real-world testing than the automatic tests that you write, just because they're a human and they know how an app should react. So you get that product feedback as well as the, you know, code and feature feedback. It does raise the stakes that you want to make sure that your automated test coverage is really solid, but that you also have a human around, multiple humans, right, that are really doing that sniff testing and really, really providing that kind of quality control that only a human can have, and building that type of QA into your process so that it's not about do I human QA or do I automated QA. It's about bringing them together in a way that makes sense for you, so that by the time the code gets to your actual customer, that they have a great experience and they will turn back to your app again and again and again and know that it's going to meet their needs. Because like you said, it is so high stakes.
In your experience as a developer, are there any tools you use specifically that you enjoy using for testing, say, iOS or Android?
So talking about tools that are specific to, other tools that are specific to mobile app QA, there's one very new tool that is, you know, sort of in a soft beta right now that I'm really excited about. So much of an app and doing QA on an app is about the user experience and what people see.
Yep.
And design, you know, obviously designers spend a ton of time on this. There's a really cool app called AppDiff. It's made by an ex-Googler that used to do some, you know, really heavy-hitting stuff over there. And what he's come up with is this tool will actually run the previous version of your code and the new version of your code that you're committing, and it will do a visual diff of all of the screens, and it'll point out all of the differences. I think that's really cool, because that's the sort of thing that, doing like doing grid integration tests, there's so many branches and so many things that can appear different. Having a tool that identifies those differences automatically, and, you know, visual differences, which are especially the kind of thing that are going to draw the eye of most typical users that aren't developers, being able to filter through the differences in an app layout very quickly as part of your QA process, I think is something that's immensely powerful and saves developers from a lot of really tedious but important work. I feel like that's the kind of stuff that it's just so easy to skip over. So having something that filters only the important things up to the surface, I think that's huge.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I'm hearing more and more about visual validation testing. And you're so right. A lot of times you'll have test automation scripts that go in and they're entering data and they're able to follow the flow, but they're not actually, you know, doing any assertions on the color of a button or the size of the button or where the button's located. But if you have a tool like Apply Tools that knows this is what it was, your baseline was like before, here's what it looks like now, and here are the visual differences, it really is, it gets you that much closer to a real user experience, I think, to point out things that a traditional automated script would never find.
Yeah. People are getting better and better at replacing us humans in this whole process.
Right. All right, Tim. So can you just tell us a little bit more about Ship.io? Based on my research, it looks like, were you in beta until May? And then recently you've gone live?
So yeah, you're right. Ship.io was in sort of a quiet free beta for quite a little while. And in the past few months, we've turned on billing and have been signing up lots of mobile developers that just want a really easy way to set up continuous integration and continuous delivery for their mobile apps. You know, the mobile app space is so different than doing server-side testing, and that requires that the tools be different. So it's not the sort of thing that you can just, you know, throw Jenkins on a server somewhere and take full advantage of all of those extended mobile development tools, and then also, you know, publish out to different users and deal with all those complexities of dealing with devices that and also the changing environment that other tools don't offer. We take all of that complexity and we roll it in-house, or we roll it into this one nice package that all you do is just sign up and it just works. Which is one of my favorite pieces of feedback, because I occasionally do support, since we are developers supporting developers. And those are my favorite kind of things, is people, you know, their jaw sort of hits the floor as to how quick and easy it was to get set up and how we sort of smooth over some rough patches. Like, so for example, CocoaPods on the iOS side of the universe, they're virtually every iOS app that you use nowadays uses CocoaPods as the library manager for making sure, for, you know, integrating third-party code. We found a small bug in it, you know, and I want to, you know, say good things about the CocoaPods team. They are all working unpaid on CocoaPods. They are all volunteers. They work their nights and weekends to make something that is absolutely insanely useful for every iOS developer. They're really, really great folks. That being said, though, they're developers, we're developers, we're all friends. We did find a bug in there, and it was something that was blocking a lot of people from being able to compile their apps. We found the fix, and we committed that. We created a pull request and sent it back up to CocoaPods, to the team. But before they were able to actually get it integrated into CocoaPods, we had already patched our local version of CocoaPods. So all of our customers were immediately, you know, we flip the switch, we push new code, they immediately get a working integration. And so that pattern that I see that happen a lot, where there are configuration changes that are required because of the diversity and the pace of development on all of these mobile development tools. There's so much to keep up with. That's something that I'm particularly proud of, because we keep up with it for everybody else, that all the developers that build with a service like Ship, they don't have to think about those things. They just commit their code and the rest of it is taken care of for them.
Awesome. So that, I guess my next question was going to be, why use Ship.io instead of, say, something like Jenkins? But I think you answered most of those questions. I guess it sounds like almost this is a cloud-based service. And rather than starting from scratch, figuring out all the tooling you need, what the configs need to be, you just log into your service and you have an environment set up, optimized specifically for mobile app development and continuous integration.
You got it. That's our world. All we do is iOS and Android. we put a lot of effort into making that sign-up process really good and really simple. We're able to detect a lot of standard configurations. You know, obviously you can organize your code in any number of ways, but we're able to pick up on a lot of those standard configurations and get a project, you know, get that first build started within, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. SHIP is free to sign up for 2 jobs, and a job is just sort of the bundle of configuration things. So it's definitely something that you can try out, and we've got a lot of really interesting integrations coming up with other products. That's in contrast to something like Jenkins, which is a great project. I've used it myself in the past, and I want to definitely respect all of the people that have put hard work into making it. That being said, though, I don't know many people that say, oh, Jenkins, you just install them and it works. you know, there's always configuration. There's always work. I remember seeing someone that they had some pretty good data to support their idea that it took 2 weeks per year per developer to manage Jenkins, a Jenkins installation. And that's just like, you know, keeping it up and keeping it running and keeping everything working beyond that initial setup time. And that can be frustrating, right? When, you know, especially if you're waiting for your code to go through automatic testing, to go out to your QA team so that you have, you know, in order to get a public release. If we think of all of the steps that are so unique to mobile, if we think of all of those as the release pipeline, because it's so much bigger, there's so much more planning that needs to be done. Having, you know, again, Jenkins, which was a great tool, having something like that sitting in the middle, you know, holding that pipeline up is really frustrating.
So Tim, I don't know why I thought of this, but what would you say are the differences, if any, between mobile app development and, say, installed software or SaaS development?
One difference that I think affects a lot of different applications. With the web, you can sort of just add features endlessly. You know, if you go to the, you know, if we just take Facebook as an easy example, when you go to Facebook.com and it pulls up your profile, you're like scratching the surface of what's there. There's so many things that are hidden below the surface that are all part of what we think of as like sort of Facebook as a whole, at least on the web. When you look at Facebook's mobile strategy, and this is something that I've seen, that I'm starting to see in other places, for both product and engineering reasons, they're breaking out functionality into different apps. So one of the big recent ones that was sort of contentious, but I think most people are okay with now, is the unbundling of Messenger from the core Facebook app. Those are different apps on mobile. I think that sort of unbundling of features is something that we're going to see more of in the mobile world, in contrast to the web side of the universe, where you can put tons of functionality under a single domain and have it be thought of and managed as a single app. That unbundling of the universe is something that I think is a little bit more distinctive about mobile CI and mobile CD. It has, you know, a lot of advantages. One big one is just, you know, frankly, app size. Their large apps are treated differently and upgraded differently than small apps. And also for navigation reasons, because you're so space constrained, and because of the ease of switching from one app to the other, it's beginning to make a lot more sense for a single company or a single entity to have, you know, maybe 4 or 5 different apps that are distributed differently and upgraded differently and managed differently, as opposed to the SaaS model, where I think people tend to think of them as single apps. This especially ties into the continuous integration, continuous delivery testing side of the universe, because there's a lot more configuration required around the test management. So with SaaS, right, you need more tests. You just add a new spec to your code base and it gets shipped off into the onto your test server somewhere and run, and you don't have to think about it. With this sort of fragmentation happening in terms of app architecture, with mobile, it means you have to set up new jobs and you have to manage all the different build configurations that a mobile app might have. When you have, you know, one company releasing five different apps, each of those is also going to have its own build configurations that need to be managed. If you have something that's being included for performance testing or, you know, enhanced login functionality, you might only want that built into your development configuration. You might not want that in your QA configuration, or you might not want that in the configuration that's building this, the code that's actually going to be released for customers. So thinking about build configurations and, you know, thinking about how to break down features into different apps that are installed and managed and built differently, I think that's another thing that is very different in both app development as well as managing the whole software development lifecycle of a mobile app as opposed to the lifecycle of code that's going to run on a server in your data center somewhere.
Awesome. Great advice. Okay, Tim, before we go, is there one piece of actual advice you can give someone to improve their mobile testing continuous integration efforts? And let us know the best way to find or contact you or Ship.io.
Well, you know, in terms of getting in touch with us, I'll take that being the easiest thing to respond to you first. Head on over, ship.io. We have one of those floating buttons that in the corner of the page. You click it, it sends us a message directly. You know, we're always keeping on top of that. Personally, if there's something that I said that's super interesting, tim@ship.io is my email. I love talking to people, so if there's any of your listeners have something that they want to follow up on, I'm definitely happy to talk about that. So now to the meat of what you asked there, which was, you know, is there any final advice that I have?
Yeah.
I think that mobile app development and mobile testing and all these things is still in the early stages, but it's hard to have universal advice. And I think that it really is in the early stages because of the pace of change that we see in the development of tools for mobile developers. You know, CocoaPods, they getting to one point, CocoaPods, the iOS development tool that I mentioned earlier, it's a running joke that they're never going to get to 1.0. you know, they had a, during WWDC here in San Francisco, I went to their CocoaPods State of the Union, and I mean, the entire room burst out laughing when someone mentioned 1.0. And in a positive sort of like, haha, we're all in this together kind of way. But I think that reflects the pace of change that's happening. So my typical advice is always pick what's right for you, not just because someone else at a different company said that they do things a certain way. You know, Facebook does a really great service of posting their developer talks from F8 online, and some of the things they talk about are amazing and incredible, but they don't make sense for, you know, a 5, 10, 20 person team that might be managing a small portfolio of apps as opposed to their environment. So always pick what's right for you. I know that's sort of a cliche piece of advice, but it really is valuable because it's so easy to want to emulate what other players are doing. Other than that, I think it might be a little bit different since, you know, we're here talking on your podcast. The people that are listening to this are already going to be a bit, I think, more savvy with some of their use of techniques and the way that they apply those techniques when it comes to testing software to further that end goal of producing a great user experience. That being said, you know, if there are some listeners that are listening to this episode that are sort of dipping their toes into it, I really want to encourage people to push themselves as far as they can within their own sort of comfort zone. So if there's a developer that's not doing any testing at all for mobile because it hasn't been a fit for them, you know, I think making some progress is really valuable. Getting that first test set up, whatever it is, just get that first test set up, because you'll find that you'll naturally, it helps remove that first barrier so that next week when you're working on a feature, add a test for that. And the feature after that, add a test for that. And you slowly build up this portfolio of tests that would otherwise probably seem very, really challenging to build up a really great portfolio. You know, you hear these remarkable numbers that come out of some teams where they have thousands of tests and covering all sorts of things. if it's someone that's trying to just get their foot in the door, or, you know, trying to get started, really, you know, that first step of getting started, I just really want to encourage people towards, because as we discussed earlier, the stakes for mobile are a little bit higher than with SaaS. And putting that effort in now is going to pay off. For people who are farther along, I get the sense that teams are either automated testing or they're human testing. They're roughly in one of those two camps where they favor one side or the other. My experience is that each of those two groups, they're both right. If someone favors one approach over another, it's because they see the value that's there. I would just really encourage people to talk with other developers who they know and who they trust, who fall in the other camp, and figure out what it is that they see, you know, where's the value that they get from their technique, and figure out how to, and think about how that technique could be applied back to their own circumstance. You know, I think that's, you know, sort of the search for wisdom. You want to observe and you want to understand how people in different environments are dealing with the situations that they're confronted with, and then figure out if there is some way that you can benefit from that advice and that knowledge as well.
Thank you, Tim, for your mobile app CI awesomeness. For links to everything of value that we talked about in this episode, head on over to testtalks.com/70. And while you're there, make sure to click on the more info link under our exclusive sponsor section to learn all about Sauce Labs' awesome products and services. And if you could do me a favor, if this episode has helped you in any way, or you think it could help someone you know, why not share this with a friend or coworker to help us spread automation awesomeness to the masses? So that's it for this episode of Test Talks. I'm Joe, and my mission is to help you succeed with automation awesomeness. As always, test everything and keep the good. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Test Talks podcast. Head on over to www.testtalks.com for full show notes, amazing blog articles, and other automation awesomeness.